Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. This is the Lockdown Leadership Network series. Today's guest is Graham Ravenscroft. He is a performance coach and he's worked on Olympic teams. He's helped out businesses. He's been in the fire brigade for a long time. And he's just an all-round very knowledgeable man on leadership and how you can use leadership to get the best out of your team. This is a wide-ranging interview. Delighted to have him on. Really interesting. Delved into quite a lot of different aspects of how we can gain those little inches that make the big difference in our lives, our businesses, and our general day-to-day stuff. So big thanks to Graham. Big thanks and a shout out to Gateway HR, who are helping our members out with their HR issues. Hope you guys enjoy it. And if you have any questions, just let me know. We're almost through this second lockdown. Fingers crossed, come the 2nd of December, it's all going to be a bit better. Onwards and upwards. Great Christmas ahead of us. And I hope you guys have a very prosperous month ahead. Army with harmony. All right. Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. This is the Lockdown Leadership Network series. And today I'm joined by Graham Ravenscroft. And he is from Gateway HR and Training. We're probably going to talk a wee bit more about training, sure, performance than HR today. I'm looking forward to this because...
Me too.
Let me tell you, it's tough bringing your best person to work, to family, to sport, to every aspect of your life when we're all under so much pressure, when we don't have control over everything. For anybody who's listening to this in posterity, it is we're halfway through our lockdown in it's the 12th of November, I think, and we're all looking forward to getting back to normal. Graham, give us your elevator pitch.
My elevator pitch. Well, firstly, Tom, thank you for the invite. It's a real pleasure to be here. So what about me? I guess, so listen, I'm first and foremost, my role is a performance coach and trainer, of course, in the world of business now. So where did it start? Well, 34 years ago now in the world of track and field athletics. And I still work in that field 2 days a week at the High Performance Centre in Loughborough. I've been very, very fortunate to work with some very talented people and been actively involved in 5 Olympians and 2 world champions in the last 2 years, which is always a good thing to say. I'm one of those guys that travels with the team. So I spent about 15 years traveling around the world to major championships and being a part of that team of people that are required to, you know, create and maintain a really high performance environment to allow, you know, those performers to be the very best they can be in that moment.
So can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
What is it that sets some of those people apart? Is there any key characteristics whenever you meet them, you sit down with them? Like, you walk me through what that is.
Yeah, no, for sure. It'd be a pleasure. Do you know, the best way to start this up would be to say, I have worked in brief with some incredibly gifted people, in the sense gifted that genetically they've been built very, very well. Mum and dad have done well. But do you know what? It doesn't guarantee the success. And I tell you what, I see the difference in some of our, in the winners. All right. They have a mindset and an attitude and a desire internally. They're intrinsically driven by this incredible desire to be the very best that they can be. Maslow, it sits right at the top, doesn't it? Self-actualization. Listen, it's been around for a long while because it exists. It's right. But these people do have that difference. And I think, you know, when setbacks happen, and because they happen all the time, and, you know, I've got that in my group at the moment, you know, that we're overcoming, much as the rest of the world is with COVID-19. But they just have an ability to adapt, to recreate, you know, the moment, the situations to go again and get themselves back to exactly where they were. And because of this desire to, I don't know, see what's possible. And they shock me all the time. They shock me all the time.
And for us mere mortals out there, us flawed individuals.
Me too.
Us recruiters. Yeah. Well, what if it can be a learned skill?
How much of it? Lots of it. And so the process, okay. So the process of being the best version, certainly when we were talking previously, and you know, I used the term to you about purposeful practice. So when I did my IAAF Elite Coach Diploma some years ago, I did a study of like national or international interest. So I looked at transition from elite junior to elite senior. Because massive dropout. And the reason being is because talent isn't enough. Just to have raw talent is not enough. People, top performers, like I say, have a matching desire, behavior, for example. And it was Owen Eastwood from the All Blacks, wasn't it? The book Legacy that gave the formula. What was it? Success in performance is ability plus behavior. Mm. And what he's saying there is I completely agree that skill alone, knowledge alone, expertise is not enough. I think top performers behave in a way that reflects the level of their ability too. But to have people around you, for example, the best team, you know, if you haven't got the best, we talk about high performance teams. The reason we talk about that is because they stand out. Some of the characteristics that exist within a high performance team don't actually exist within just everyday teams. Mm.
So let's break that down for the businessmen listening.
Sure.
You go into a room because we all want to get a bit more juice out of them, right? Like we want to work out where the marginal gains are. Where do you start with making that happen?
So one of the things I've done, Dalt, over the years, over three decades, you know, being around high-performing teams, whether it be the world of sport or world of business, or in some of the worlds as well, like public sector, and 30 years in the fire service myself, didn't just throw that in, 30 years of operational duty in the fire service, retired 3 years ago, worked with the RAF, worked with police and stuff like that. And I think what I've learned to collect is there are common traits, common behaviours that exist, common ways of working that I believe are kind of ever present in certain teams that set themselves apart. Mm. They create an environment where it's encouraged to challenge each other, but they do it comfortably. And we might think, well, that's normal, isn't it? But it's not normal. When you get out there, you know, this idea of feedback and challenge, it was, I'll give you a phrase that I think everybody should look at their own business and consider. And I'll quote it from, it was a Harvard Business Review about 18 months ago, which reported back on Project Aristotle, which was Google looking at over 2 years at 180 top performing teams. And the one that I love is they talked about a psychological safe zone. And it's definitely something that I've created in every team that I've been in. It's definitely something that exists now within my high performance world, in sport. Mm. Because when you have experts in their own field, they still need to be challenged in their way of thinking and their way of working, their way of behaving, because we want the very best out of them. If we want to look at those marginal gains, we can never stop looking for them. And the knowledge sits within the experts. That's why we have a team in the first place. So we don't limit the performance to just one person's genius or one person's energy levels or one person's innovative thinking or problem solving. We expand that. So it's about recruitment for sure in terms of who we bring into the team. And I have to think very carefully about that. And circumstances within the performers change within the business that force you maybe to look back at your team and constantly review, have I got the right people here? Have I got the right skills? Okay.
When I was beginning my career in recruitment, I joined a large company called Robert Walters, and I was a bit older than a lot of the other people, and what struck me was how hard they pushed the high performance, the culture, the we are this, we do this, this sets us apart, and got your vernacular and your thought process right. It, to the extent I thought that if somebody worked for Hayes, they were sick, or like they really ingrain it into that. For any of us with small businesses, how do we foster our own culture and turn it into a high performance, like? Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. Let me just say, I don't believe, I've not seen an example or work with anybody that just stumbled across greatness, real success, you know, yeah. Woke up in the morning, went, wow, oh, this is amazing. You know, maybe six numbers on the lottery would be a good day. But seriously, you know, achievement, actually developing something, creating something, is pretty much really well planned for, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think in terms of developing that, let me share a couple of things with you. I want to keep it simple. I'll quote some references so you can go out. There's a super book, I think, which was by a guy called Daniel Pink. I don't know if you read it. It's called Drive. I think it was 2011. And he's a Canadian author. And it looks at motivation, particularly within individuals. But one thing I've learned is, as a manager myself and as a trainer of business leaders and as a performance coach, it's not enough for me to have, I have incredible enthusiasm and energy, right? But that's not enough. I have to absolutely tap into that energy and understand the intrinsic motivators of every single person I work with. Every single person in your team, what is it makes them tick? Do we need to know? I would say, yes, you do need to know. Because if you're going to get the very best out of that entire business, then we need to actively create an environment that supports every single person in the business. Now, there's three really basic things, if I can share them with you. Sure. And the book really, so there's a lot of stuff in the book, but there's a couple of things I think really sum up the question, I believe. And that is, make sure that everybody in the entire business, front to back, left to right, 360 degrees, understands their purpose. Now, it's not just the purpose as in, why am I here? But their purpose within the context of the much wider business and the much wider community, as in the public, the consumer, the group. If I do what I do and I do it well, what's the impact on my team? What's the impact on the wider business? Actually, if I don't do it so well, if I don't do it at all, what's the real impact on the wider business? So it's about having meaningfulness to actually your purpose. Get people to understand the meaning and impact of what they do. Okay.
Yeah.
The second part to do with your teams, as you say, is to create an environment where mastery is constantly being, you know, strived for. Mm. I think it's a great word, mastery. So what that means is actually giving people, and I mean every single body in your team, the ability or the opportunity, let's say, to be the very best they can be at any given day. Because, you know, progress is linear in, you know, in individuals. So it can be measured within individuals as well as the team, as well as the organization. But what does that environment look like? I tell you what it looks like. It has really good training. And there's a bit of a misconception, by the way, that if you go to a training course, you come back skillful. It doesn't work that way. You come back at a point of acquisition. Yeah. We've acquired some knowledge. There requires a process, people, back in the workplace. We have to create an environment where people can be exposed to situations where they're allowed to practice safely and apply that skill and knowledge without fear of falling short and knowing that they're being supported. Because we have to create skillful people, we have to, one, acquire some skill and knowledge, but two, we have to have the opportunity to develop that in a practical way. It's about applying skill in a practical way to get a really positive result, yeah?
Is there anything that sets dealing with recruiters and salespeople apart from some other business people?
Listen, my experience says that they, you know, they're incredibly hardworking, an incredible amount of hours. I'm going to just be honest here and say, I think the last time I was in a room, it doesn't matter where, full of about 80 plus recruiters, I dared to talk about one really misunderstood essential component of high performance. And I talked about rest and recovery. and it was, I'm not too sure. My experience says that you get too much rest and recovery in that world.
Yeah, look, I think that world's changing.
Good.
Because when I started, as I mentioned, I got into it a bit later, but I, 10 years ago, say I started, and it was work hard, booze hard. Yeah. And the next generation aren't interested in that. Like, they're more interested in how good they look on Instagram and all the rest. And then I think now that COVID's happened, it's like, it's very different. So it's like, how can I perform? How can I survive? The psychology's kind of changed. It's I'm hoping that's changed anyway. I think rest and recovery are super important. I had
well, they are super important. So yeah. Go on, finish and I'll.
So I had Ryan from Odra on, and he says like he's in bed by 9 o'clock. He's up at 5:30. He does the kids, does the run, gets into work, has his thing, and makes sure that his day is planned and he has it all done. And that look to me that looks like a high performing person rather than working all the time.
Yeah. If we continue to stress. Yeah, okay. So if I do this as a generic statement, you know, the principle of working, of developing performance in whatever you work with, whether your business, your people and the rest of it, there's a principle of what we call overload. So what that means is actually if we're working at the end position, how do we work past our end position? That's the position we've never been before.
Yeah.
You have to take a risk-preferred approach to that. I don't think... Well, I believe, so I'm comfortably believe from my experience, you know, this can't be achieved without risk. But it's about understanding the risk, and it's about understanding how you reduce the potential hazard or the likelihood that it'll happen. So it's about minimizing.
Or that's too much time in the red zone, isn't it?
Well, this is it, you see. If we don't recover, so there's a thing called compensation. So in order to create adaptation, say, for example, within our physiological cells, right, and our emotional cells, what we do is we stress the system. So we overload it in principle. We actually do more than it's ever done. But the most important thing is that we allow that to our bodies to recover for that compensation to happen. Okay. So take a business now that's in the world of COVID, and I'm working with a number of businesses that have 200 times more, literally, seriously, 200 times more. I mean, it's just incredible situations. And I think the important thing is, you know, this idea of burnout in people's minds, and come on, we've got to work hard. And well, you have got to work hard. And I know of next to no, or no, in fact, none examples, individuals or teams that didn't work incredibly hard. But is it sustainable with the same group of people? I say no. Somebody will come on and tell me that they can, and they've worked, you know, for 15 years at 3 hours sleep and are good. Good luck, I would say. Listen, here speaks somebody that knows, right? It's not sustainable. And there's lots of evidence out there. And I would say that, you know, pay huge respect to this. Yes, work hard. Yes, at times you've got to work hard. But do you know the bits that... I've got Olympic athletes now. I've got a Paralympian world champion, okay? And one of the comments... Let me share a thought with you. And I don't know whether this will resonate. I hope so, because I just thought about it. I was sat doing an end of season review last year. We were world champion. And by the way, 18 months before, he ruptured his Achilles tendon on his disability leg. So he's the only known athlete in the world to fully rupture the Achilles tendon in his disability leg. Now, 18 months later, we were in Dubai and we became world champion last year. Now, when we reviewed the year and we set up for this year, I used this phrase and I said, do you know the beautiful thing is now, we don't have to make an Olympian. We've got one. And there's a difference. There's a difference trying to... So I would say within your business, sometimes the hard work needs to be done in order to create the business. Sustainability, affect the bottom line, ever the dream is. But actually, when you're in that world there, of course we have to work hard to maintain it, but we have to work so you'll have heard that phrase. But what we do there is we get, you know, we develop our people as well. We develop their knowledge and their skills. And as a team, what we try to do is we try to develop mechanical efficiency. So we don't have to, so we can just save moments, seconds, We don't waste the time making the mistakes because we learn the mistakes. Does that? I hope that makes sense. And it's not kind of like that. So, you know, are we busy all the time? Is that sustainable? Somebody, my example.
Yeah. Say, Joe Rogan goes to the example of Bill Clinton often and mentions, you know, like, look at the state of him now. Like he's famous for not sleeping, and he was a fine looking man, and you know, he could deliver any speech. He was incredible. And now he's just like, from all that hard work and stress, you look at him, you're like, oh, that's.
I look at a couple of football managers and I think the same, you know, let's not mention their names here, but I really do. And they're in pressure worlds. And I would say, if you want to keep high performing teams together, if you want retention to be good, you know, and develop these people, then we do have to pay respect to that. Is it a problem in terms of developing, you know, peak performance now, this idea of sort of well-being? Okay, let's chuck that out. Mental health, well-being. Listen, let's be sure here. This is the single biggest loss of days to the British economy by a mile. Mm. By a mile. 2019, HSE stated over 600,000 separate cases. And the average day away from work is, you know, for each of those cases, the average is, I think it's come down, it's about 23.9 days. So we're not talking a day off and we're okay again. Anyway, so we do have to pay respect to recovery in developing performance. Yeah.
In our world, recruitment's famous for one in two people not surviving. Mm. In the old days, we wore it with a badge of honor. We brought in people real young. Hopefully one of them survives, the car pays for the one that didn't. Yep. So it's almost been like a cultural thing that high turnover has always like just been part of what we do. And this was almost been celebrated. I think that's starting to change a little bit now because we've just had a year with no graduates join. Anybody who's in it is a bit more experienced and expensive. So if it's an expensive person to bring in, we need to reduce the staff turnover. From a qualitative perspective with our clients and all the rest, what advice do you have for any founder that's, you know, got a team and they have that like they're burning people out? Like what do you do?
Okay, great question. I'm going to answer that question by talking about three. We summed this up as like peak performance, this idea of being the best we can be. I want to give you three examples of what peak performance looks like. There's a single moment, there's a PB, as we call it, or next to it in an athletics world, say PB. That means personal best. That's the single most fastest time, greatest throw, greatest contract that you ever got. Mm. That's peak performance. And then there's another idea of peak performance when we weren't actually at that level, but it was enough to win the biggest prize. So in competition with other people, we actually went in lower, but we still got the contract. I went to the Olympic Games. I didn't even do my best, but I still won because I beat everybody else on the day. There's that peak performance. And there's the other one that I think we should really consider, and that's called peak flow. That's the ability to sustain high levels of performance for the longest period of time. And I think in business terms, that's where we should be, isn't it? That's where we should strive to. We should strive for, of course, peak performance, single moment, best contract. But it's about sustainability, I would say. Unless you've got a different goal.
It's a real, just to interrupt there, but it's a real interesting point. So my wife is the biggest asset in our business.
Yeah.
She's the best recruiter. Okay. And 2 weeks ago I saw that she was close to burnout. So I was like, listen, finish up now. You know, I'll see if the team can do. The team haven't done it.
No.
but she's had 2 weeks. And now she's in there in the background working away. And when I was less experienced, I would have let her carry on until she was broken. So I was able to just see those warning signals. And now I know, okay, till December 18th, she's going to give it a real crack now. It's that peak flow piece. It's tough with high performing people like her.
It is. Yeah. And I'll tell you for why, because sometimes that skill level, as you said, is, you know, it's down to your wife and respect to your wife. You know, that level of skill that she's developed and has is so unique, so niche to you that nobody else can do it. But when we're developing sustainability and flow, we need to look at the resilience of the business. Mm. And one of the things that I would do, so I will give it to you now, go into a business. One of the first things I did, to Gateway HR. I can say that now. First time I went in, I went to Emma, the boss, and I went, right, I'm going to take you out of the business for 3 months.
Yeah.
My face was dropped to the front. Right, don't panic. Right, but I'm going to. Let's play this game. So we're going to take your wife out of the business for 3 months.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss does that. He's written a book on that. It's okay. It's real tough. So that's I have tried this at times with her. Each time I have to get her back in.
But what else can you do? My question to you, Doctor. I find myself coaching. I can't help myself. So my question to you, here's a bit of live stuff, is what else can you do to create resilience?
Yeah. So
to losing her. So you've got to see beyond her, but actually involve her.
Yeah. And look, I think we've tried quite a bit. Like, so we've got two brilliant assistants now, and we've broken down every part of Charlotte's job, taught them it, done all the rest, and broken up to what she can do. And it worked for a little bit when the market's good, but when the market's hard like this, it's those inches of getting something out quicker or thinking on your feet just that wee bit quicker that she has that they don't have. And when she comes back in, we're like, we fire up again. So it's a...
Does she mentor others in the business? Do you use mentoring? There's just a thought in terms of what that truly means. Yeah, I think when you're developing people here, I don't know if you've seen the performance development model. You're trying to get the best out of every single person. I want to refer to you to two particular models. Human performance curve, I would say really look at it and try and understand it. I'll come back to that. And the other one is, I've just lost track actually by chucking that one in first. It was to do with... remind me what you were just saying about the wife, please.
Just about taking her out of the business for 3 months, having that person who could burn out if we don't.
Yes. Yeah. So in terms of the other model, it's the learning cycle. Okay. So I don't know whether you've seen it. I won't go through the whole cycle, but it begins at the point of unconsciously incompetent. I don't know whether you've heard of that. So, okay. Unconsciously incompetent basically means, and think about people in your business here. This is how you develop peak performance. Stretching this out, talking a bit. So think about this, unconsciously incompetent, that defines the novice. That is somebody that is basically not aware of how rubbish they are. Let's say that. They've no idea. They don't know what they don't know. So actually we need to, we take them through this sort of process. The second stage is what we call consciously incompetent. Tough. But it's the point where we have to, you know, through teaching, through a little bit of insight, showing, we acquire some information that says, okay, I know what it is that I kind of need to do. I still can't do it. So we're consciously incompetent. Now, the performance pathway, as I call it, or as people call it, is going from a point of consciously incompetent to consciously competent.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So not to stop your flow.
No, go on.
For anybody who's listening to this, this is real relevant when we're bringing an experienced hire from another business into our business, because numbers at a different business don't necessarily equate to the numbers that you'll do in a new business. And I think it can almost take twice as long to retrain somebody as train somebody. Yeah. So I suppose the terms that you're putting that in is really interesting.
I would focus on the last bit here for you as well in terms of the wife, because I don't want to lose that point of... So the reason I'm using this model, to become skillful, we need to coach in there. What is a performance coach? Selling coaching? No, of course. But listen, Jessica Ennis said, Tony Minicello, you know what I mean? Even presidents, prime ministers, you know, Oprah Winfrey has Martha Beck. Yeah, find a really top person, a high achiever in any walk of life that wasn't coached at some point. Now, so I would say, are we coaching in the workplace? What that means is to, when people come in with skill, we still need to challenge their thinking. So that becoming skillful, consciously competent, is about challenge, about process, is about feedback, is about just constantly giving people the opportunity to consider how to do it different. Now, when we are skillful, this is the last point, what you want, what you've got in your wife is you've got somebody who is unconsciously competent. That's where we want to be, isn't it? What that means is expert. Now, let me explain the conscious and unconscious, please. There's lots of research out there that crosses a few figures here. So I'm actually going to split the difference. Now, research suggests that 85% of each and every one of our days requires no conscious thought. 85%. Anyway, I'll let you think about it. Fascinating.
That is.
What does it mean? It means that when people are in your workplace behaving a particular way,
they're on autopilot, right?
They're constantly on autopilot. So actually, it's imperative, of course, that if we want, listen, purposeful practice isn't about doing things lots of times.
Yeah.
It is, you know, Anders Ericsson and his original writers in Peak and 10,000 hour rule, and then followed up by Bounce, of course, with Matthew Saeed. Yes, there's something there, but that's not enough. If it's crap practice, it doesn't deliver experts. Now, what your wife's done, I'm for certain here, is to become unconsciously competent, which is expert, means that she's practiced in an incredibly expert way.
Yeah.
Now, that's where mentoring comes in. When we're trying to develop somebody from skillful to an expert, your challenge is to look at and identify the difference in the performer. What is it that makes her so special? Mm. And you've got to now to try and recruit and get people in your business that are skillful. And then actually spend time creating resilience by trying to work with your wife to actually share some of that finer detail.
Yeah.
Remember what I said, it might not necessarily be in the skill or understanding or knowledge in the business. It might be a behavior. It might be a way of communicating. Mm. It might be a way of recovering. But the top performers have got it right. We need to be sharing that sort of insight with ourselves as we do across the business. You know, and my team of people around athletes is full of people who have done it loads of times in their field. And we constantly challenge each other to make sure that each individual gets the very best of them as well.
Graham, if you'll come back, I'll have you on loads, because I could talk to you about this all day. we're nearly out of time. I wanted to just go into one of those things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You mentioned that the best teams are not afraid to challenge each other and to make each other feel uncomfortable.
Correct.
It's operating outside your comfort zone, and yes, everybody doing that. In Robert Walters, we used to have to stand up, deliver a candidate every morning, and everybody beat us up on it. And it wasn't a nice experience, right?
No.
I didn't like it. But let me tell you, I got bloody good. What should we be doing to develop that and foster that in our teams?
Okay. Consider a world without it to start with.
Yeah, I've seen loads of them.
Yeah, of course. and I have.
Yeah.
And so I would say, if you're listening to this video, I mean, you don't talk and you don't create challenge, you don't seek for... Okay, to the wider audience, when they're watching this, when was the last time that you asked for some feedback on your behavior, your skill, what you did? And if it was a long time ago, how comfortable, how sure are you you're doing it to the best way you can? Okay. In essence, remember, to work beyond the end position, and I touched on this earlier and then we digress, but to work beyond the end position, we will see things for the very first time. Yeah.
Yeah.
We will have to make decisions that we've never made. All right. We will have, all that sort of stuff that the very first time. Now, so we have to take a risk. Now, in terms of challenging people, what we're doing here is essentially we're getting them to make sure that they are constantly pushing the boundaries. Now, the danger is here, and there's some incredible work. If you wanted to do a future one, really, I would really just look at this idea of the value of feedback and why feedback fails. There's an interesting one. Why does feedback fail? Because for me, feedback is an absolutely fundamentally essential component of developing performance in people. Otherwise, how do we know, you know, how well we're doing? And that concept of challenge, by the way, and this psychological safe zone. Now, there's the key, is that we need to create an environment where it's normal. So that was the answer.
That's the answer.
Where it's normal, as in it's expected. And we also need to recognize individuals, by the way. Mm. All right, I happen to have the only nationally accredited level 5 diploma in stress management. I think I had a spare half an hour at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday some years ago and did it. But the relevance of that is if you get the wrong person, language matters, by the way, when you're challenging people.
Yeah.
Language matters hugely. Think about what the challenge is about. Think about what you're trying to achieve by challenging someone's what they do or their actions or their thinking. And be careful not to turn on their stress response. If they feel it's a threat, then basically their ability to rationale anything you're saying and actually use it productively or constructively to change how it is about nil. So.
There's another bit I wanted to kind of delve into a bit more. We might do it a bit next time, but I'll just touch on it. You mentioned when you went into Gateway HR, the first thing you did was take the founder out for 3 months to see how
it operated. As a principal.
I understand it. Yeah. From my reading, the next stage of that is usually founder's guilt and what the founder does then and how they see their job. This area of coaching fascinates me. You must see a bit of a roller coaster and how they like go through things and act. And
I do, of course. Do you know, there's a little quote that I'll throw at you to give you a thought. Was it Andrew Carnegie, I believe, industrialist, that once said, on my epitaph, it will read, "Here lie a man who was wise enough to surround himself with people greater than I."
Yeah.
And I would urge every business owner to do exactly the same.
Yeah.
Get comfortable in actually doing that. Now, so what you're saying there is, so from Emma's point of view, I'm saying as much as we, you know, you are so valued, the value is in such a specific place. That's what we've identified without, you know, alive and air going in. But we've identified within the operating system that we use, the EOS that we use, we've identified that the particular value and niche that only she has in our business. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. But of course, what you do need to do in terms of resilience is work with people to develop that skill as much as I'm saying with your wife. But what you've got to do is you've got to learn to go just in simple. Remember why we have a team in the first place. I'm going to go back to that and answer that question. And the business owner, knowledge is power. Listen, get over it. Be comfortable not holding all the information. That's why you employ the other people.
Okay. We're going to finish up on that. Graham, thanks so much. You're right. You should challenge yourself amongst great people. We've got a great network called the Lockdown Leadership Network. You guys are a part of it. I really appreciate you coming on. I want to get you on again. I could talk to you all day about this.
Great. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thanks so much.
Pleasure. Take care, everybody.